Okay. So welcome to your Clean Language Taster teleclass. And in this call this evening, I'm going to be introducing you to this fascinating technique and show you a little bit about how it works and explain some of its uses. By the end of the call, you're going to have a simple tool that you can take away and use afterwards. And also, I hope I'm going to whet your appetite to explore this further and develop your knowledge and skills in this area some more. We are planning further learning opportunities for next year, and we'll be keeping you informed as and when those happen. And also, if any of you want to look at further options within your organisation, I'd be very happy to pick up with you separately and talk about that. Okay, are you all still with me?
Yes.
It was suddenly too quiet, so I was panicking in case you all disappeared. Okay, I'm going to start by explaining a little bit about how metaphors reveal the structure of our thinking. And if you know anything about clean language, I hope that you perhaps already know how clean language links in to how somebody might use metaphors in their everyday language. So first of all, just have a think about how you think, and in particular, how human beings structure their thoughts. And I hope that you get a sense that most of the time, we're not really aware of what's happening with our thinking. It's something that's happening mostly on an unconscious level, and certainly how we structure our thinking. And a long time ago, Carl Jung surmised that our thought structures, when we're sort of picking up information in the world out there, perceiving information and taking in all this knowledge, all this information all the time, we get to a point beyond which our consciousness cannot hold on to it all. And so it goes into our unconsciousness and is stored through symbols. That's what Jung believed. And he thought that the way to get to that deeper layer of thinking was through interpreting the symbols that we came up with in dreams. Cut to today's modern scientists, they do know now that our thoughts, even our conceptual thoughts, are held in complex patterns and systems. So when we think about something conceptual that has no form, we are pattern-making creatures, so we give it some kind of form. And then, to take that a stage further, George Lakoff and Mark Johnson wrote a fantastic book a number of years ago called Metaphors We Live By. And they put forward this thinking that metaphors are not just figures of speech, not just a descriptive way of describing something. More than that, the metaphors contain clues to how we are actually structuring our thinking. And as we go through this call, I hope I'm going to demonstrate how true that is. And I think probably it would be good to start with a quick demonstration of that. So I'd like you all to just think about a relationship that you have with someone. And I suggest you don't pick your nearest and dearest for this, but maybe think about a certain work relationship or family relationship. It could be good, bad, or indifferent. That's up to you. You won't have to share this, but I might ask a couple of you to do so. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I want you to see what comes up for each of you. So when you think of that relationship is like what? Okay. Do we have one volunteer that might like to share what came up and be willing to be asked two or three more questions about that?
It's Lindsay.
I'm Lindsay.
Number six. And okay. I'm willing to share, happy to share. The relationship that I thought about is my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And the image that came up was a duvet.
A duvet. Hmm. Okay. And that relationship for you is like a duvet. And is there anything else about that duvet?
It's warm. that adapts to my shape.
Mm.
And it's there when I need it.
Okay. So it's warm, it adapts to your shape, and it's there when you need it.
Yeah.
And when it's warm, whereabouts is it warm?
Where is it warm? Where is it warm? Around my heart.
Mm. And when it's warm around your heart, is there anything else about warm around your heart?
It sort of radiates out.
Mm-hmm. And when it's warm around your heart and it sort of radiates out, then what happens?
Then what happens?
When it radiates out.
What happens? It reaches other spaces.
Mm-mm. And is there anything else about reaching other spaces?
It's a kind of pale orange.
Mm.
Very pale orange.
Mm. And would that be an okay place, Lindsay, to just bring that to a close?
Yeah, fine.
Okay, thank you. So I gave you a taste there of how quite quickly you can go from a concept to something metaphorical, and then actually something that's describing what might be going on inside a person and how they feel. And the purpose of that exercise, as with a lot of clean language work, was to literally just model what it was like for Lindsay. Now, there was no objective in that exercise. We didn't need to change the relationship. We didn't need to analyze the relationship. But it was a simple way of helping Lindsay to get an understanding of that relationship, perhaps in a different way to she has done before. So were it a problem relationship, she may get some understanding of how she's perceiving that relationship to understand something new about it. So encouraging a client to talk in terms of the metaphor and describe that metaphor helps them to take their understanding to a different level of thinking. And I'm sure you'll know that Einstein said you're very unlikely to solve a problem at the same level of thinking that the problem was created. Especially with someone who's had an ongoing problem for a long period of time. So let's say it's a relationship problem or a work-related issue that's been ongoing and it keeps cropping up over and over again in different shapes and forms, which is often the way with people. You know, problems tend to come in patterns, and we keep repeating that same pattern over and over again. And clean language is a fantastic way of helping someone to not just go down that same thinking process when they think about that problem, but to help them to step outside of that and start looking at what's actually going on with their thinking. So Lindsay quite easily came up with a metaphor by the sounds of it, and I'm guessing that most of you did. Some will find it more easy than others. Some people you might have to ask quite a few questions before they start to describe concepts in metaphors. On average, Lakoff and Johnson worked out that the average person uses 4 metaphors every minute to describe something about their experience. So, you know, you ask that relationship question of people, you might get back, it's like a roller coaster in which, you know, you might get quite a clear sense of quite a lot of information about how that relationship works, or certainly how that person perceives that relationship working. Or it might be a bed of roses, or a firecracker, or a time bomb. And in all those examples, metaphors give you a key or a route in to start to analyse and understand how a person is structuring their thinking. The purpose not for you to make any judgments or conclusions, but for the person themselves to understand at a deeper level. So a metaphor, a definition of a metaphor is about expressing one thing in terms of another. Now, as far as our actual thought structures are concerned, we're never going to really be able to express what's happening. So metaphors are probably the closest thing that we have to an explanation of what's going on inside our heads. The word itself, metaphor, comes from the Greek word amphora. That's the root of the word. And the amphora was one of these Greek urns with handles on both sides. And the idea was they also had a pointy end, so you couldn't actually rest them down. You simply had to carry them from one place to another. So another way of thinking about a metaphor as a metaphor in itself is it's a container.
Can you repeat the word, Angela? What are you saying that it comes from? Or can you spell it? I can't quite...
Amphora. I'll spell it for you. It's A, M for mother, P for Percy, H-O-R-A. And the key message here is it's like a container, and within one or two words can be a whole depth of information that a person might not fully appreciate on a conscious level until you start asking the clean language questions. So any questions from anyone so far?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So a structure of a person's thinking can be revealed through sometimes very subtle metaphors. And believe me, once you get into this, you start to notice the sort of more hidden metaphors that might be within someone's language. So someone might say to you, again, I'll stick with the relationship metaphor because it's quite a rich one. Someone might say, this relationship is going nowhere, which sort of implies that a relationship should be like a journey. So that, again, gives you some clues as to the kind of thought structures that might exist for them around relationships. Or someone might say, I'm very happy in this relationship. What's the metaphoric clue in that sentence?
In.
Yes, because by using the word in, they have turned the relationship into some kind of container. So by asking what kind of relationship is one that you're happy in, might get you some metaphoric descriptions, because already within that, within their choice of language, they started to put a shape and a form to that concept of a relationship. Once you start exploring these metaphors, the concepts and ideas all tend to connect together to form bigger pieces. And that's one of the things with clean language we're not going to get a chance to go into this depth this evening. But one of the things you might do with clean language is after you've explored various parts of the jigsaw puzzle, have people start to connect one to another. And in a way, it's another way to have people start to understand if they've got conflicting beliefs or limiting beliefs or values that might be conflicting, but they'll be doing it all through metaphor. You may be aware that clean language was originally created by a incredible psychotherapist, New Zealand psychotherapist called David Grove, and he created clean language. It sort of came out of him naturally when he was working with trauma victims. Because he found that it was far harder to get them to work on their problems when they were talking about real life situations or memories, because it was just too painful and difficult. And he found that by working in metaphor, they were able to sort of get through lots of stuff that was going on behind the scenes in a totally sort of painless way. Now, you don't have to work with clean in that kind of deep level of work. But even with, you know, just some of the normal everyday situations and problems that people find themselves up against, often the problem is that habitual nature of our thinking patterns that binds us to keep making the same mistakes over and over again. The person who says, it's like I'm banging my head against a brick wall. You know, they sort of know that they're providing the momentum themselves, but they haven't quite worked out what's behind that force that keeps them banging their head. So, you know, this provides them with a way and a means of understanding those thought structures in a totally different way. So let's talk about the clean language questions. And first of all, just think, well, if you can accept that having a person explore their metaphors can help them think differently, how might you do that? Well, a totally directive and non-coach approach might be to say to them, don't you think it's a bad idea to think about your relationship like a roller coaster? Which, of course, we all know is not very productive because you can't think like that. If that's the way the person thinks, even if they decide for themselves, hey, I don't want to think like that anymore, it's easier said than done. Now, what you could do is give them another metaphor. Why don't you think about your relationship as a jet plane taking off? Well, I know with some NLP techniques, it does involve having, you know, giving somebody a metaphor to try on for size. But it's a little bit like wearing someone else's clothes. It's, you know, a bit uncomfortable and somehow wrong. It doesn't quite fit. So, with clean language, you can help a person become more aware of the meaning contained within their own metaphors. And by having them pay attention to those well-beaten paths of thinking, it enables them to naturally start to find new diversions and new ways out by simply having them understand how it all fits together. And when people make change like that, so the roller coaster, having explored it for 10 minutes or so, they realize can straighten out and does straighten out in their mind's eye in your session there and then, that change of metaphor then transfers back to just how they view that relationship. And of course, a change at that fundamental level of structure of thinking just means that they respond to that relationship differently. So with clean language, you don't necessarily need to come out with heaps of actions. Sometimes when somebody changes at that fundamental level, the job is done. You can build into it actions, and you certainly want to measure what happens afterwards. But in itself, it can bring about transformational change. So I did say a little bit about the structure of clean language questions at the start, but let me say a little bit more now. So what kind of questions are clean language questions? They are all very simple. The idea is, they contain no hidden metaphors themselves, other than the two metaphors that are sort of fundamental to all of us, which is time and space. Now, I used a time and space question with Lindsay in that little introduction because I asked her whereabouts was warm. Because for something to be warm, you have to, for you to know it's warm, you have to be feeling it somewhere in your body. So a slight leap, and the whereabouts question, as clean language questions go, can sometimes stop people in their tracks. They need to think quite deeply to work out whereabouts, but it's a clean question. And the other one I asked was, and what happens next? Everything exists within time. There is always a process, there is always a next, and there is always a before. And sometimes it can be very helpful, especially when someone's really stuck, to have them think about what the next step is in this thought process. And of course, with some people, when you go on a few steps further forward, they may well find themselves right back at the beginning, especially the person who says that they keep going around in circles. So you may well start to map out that circular thinking, but contained within a metaphor. Clean language questions contain no assumptions to distract the client away from their own thoughts. So if you think about it, when you're asking clean language questions, it's like you're holding a mirror up to to the client, and what they get back is exactly what they said, along with a question for a little bit more information. They're not having a conversation with you. Their attention, as you go through this process, becomes more and more focused on themselves. What's quite interesting is sometimes you'll get an I don't know first time that you ask a certain clean language question. But a couple of minutes later, they do know, because the more they pay attention to what's going on inside, the clearer it becomes, because you're not giving them any distractions. The other thing that's important about clean language questions is how they're delivered. Again, you probably heard when I was talking to Lindsay, they're delivered in quite a slow, repetitive rhythm. And that certainly helps to hold the person in their own thoughts. Now, if you're working with somebody for the first time using this technique and they're not prepared for that, it actually might distract them, because for them it might sound a little bit odd. So my suggestion to you would be, you would start more conversational, but as the person becomes more interested in their internal world, to slow it down and keep repeating back in this sort of special syntax where you repeat back the words and then add the question on. With Lindsay, it seemed as though she was starting to get a sense of what was going on inside in just a few questions. So it can happen quite quickly, and certainly some people are already quite in touch with their metaphors, even though they might not have been asked clean language questions before. And you'll find those kind of people will adapt to this process very, very quickly. And some people are more rigid conceptual thinkers, in that they will just keep giving you more and more concepts without explaining what it's like. Now, for those kind of people, it might be tougher to get them to go inside and explore metaphors, but they're often the people that will get the most value from it. The kind of person that's sort of stuck in their own logic can find this process really, really refreshing and a very useful way to have new insights and understandings. Okay, so in summary, clean language is a technique. It's a way of asking questions. But clean itself is an overall approach or philosophy or mindset, if you like. And what clean is about is don't give any interference to the process. Keep yourself out of the client's stuff. Totally non-directive. Not necessarily driving towards an outcome, although, as you learn about clean, there is a structure where you can certainly ask for an outcome at the outset and work on that outcome. The basis that your solution is not the coachee's solution. Your ideas are dirty, okay, not clean. The mindset is that understanding in itself will lead to greater choices for the client, and having those choices will encourage the client to find the change that's right for them, with no force, with no push. Okay, any questions at this point from anybody?
I had a question that I think you answered in some way, but just to check.
Okay.
Because you talked about There's always a kind of next stage.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said that, I was wondering if, in fact, there always is a next stage. And you said that somebody might actually find themselves back at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which kind of made sense, because I just had a sense that there's not necessarily always, you know, somewhere that you go. Some things may finish or end or clear.
And then when they clear, what happens next? Something new will start. So in a way, it might not always be the question to ask, because you may well have finished the process and you want them to end and they want to end, having resolved it. So it's finished, if you like. But in a sense, when we're alive as human beings, there is always the next thing that happens. And in our imagination, you know, however, whatever's finished, there will always be the next thing. It's a difficult one to explain further, but you might see it when we go into a demonstration. Certainly as far as clean language is concerned, you might not want to keep moving forward, but you could always ask that question. In fact, depending on what you're modelling out, you may well want to hold them into the now rather than move them forward. But it is an option, and you can always move backwards. What happened just before?
It's
a very useful one for having people understand. You know, let's say they're describing a process. Well, it's like a time bomb. The fuse gets ignited, and then it fizzes along, and then suddenly, boom. And what happens just before it gets ignited? It might be a part of that process they've never thought about before. And as I say, to have them think about it metaphorically, contained within that, rather than give you three or four descriptions of real life, the kind of things that happen, can be a lot more productive. Any more questions, or are you ready to hear a more detailed demonstration? Okay, now, Kathleen, you volunteered before the call, didn't you, to be a demo subject. I've got a backup demo person if you feel it's not appropriate, but we're going to keep this fairly simple and straightforward, as I did with Lindsay. I'm going to make it sort of outcome-y based, but the purpose will be to explore. And I'm going to start by asking you a cleanish question, but it's not a clean language question. I'm going to ask you, what would you like more of in your life?
Richness and abundance.
Richness and abundance.
Or a belief in it, yeah.
A belief in richness and abundance. And what kind of belief is a belief in richness and abundance?
It's a sort of velvety. I don't know. I've just got an image of a belief that is a purse, like a vintage purse that's kind of velvet.
You just got an image of that. Kind of vintage purse that's velvety. Is there anything else about velvety on that vintage purse?
It's a quality, it's sort of like a very quality fabric. Even though it's quite old, it's not really showing any signs of wearing because it's made out of really good quality velvet.
And even though it's old, it's not showing any signs of wearing. And is there anything else about quality when it's quality fabric?
It's worth something. It's been carefully chosen. And it's been looked after, and
And is there anything else about that vintage purse that's velvety, that's been carefully chosen and looked after?
It's kind of stuffed. It's quite full of lots of stuff. But it looks okay.
And it's quite stuffed.
Full. It's collected lots of things along the way, and it's kind of, you know, not bursting at the seams, but it's full. And it's got lovely clasps, so rounded. I think they're like pearl clasps.
Is there anything else about that pearl clasp?
I think it's quite delicate, it's quite fragile. I think it's yes, it can be broken easily, so it's fragile.
Is there anything else about fragile, when it can be broken easily?
I suppose it contrasts with the velvet. That it's, even though it's worth something like the velvet, but it's also, it's not as robust. So it's kind of contrasting. It's precious, or semi-precious.
And this vintage purse is quite stuffed. It's collected lots of things along the way. What kind of things are the things that it's collected?
It's stuffed. I have to look inside. That's the things in there. There's some trinkets, there's jewels, there's some money, like, you know, bills, notes, some buttons and coins, little bits of chocolate in there, I guess, some lovely kind of perfume, little pretty bottles of perfume, and I'm seeing little scraps of paper. Little scraps of fabric.
And is there anything else about all those things?
They all have sort of particular importance or meaning. They have a little story to tell, each of them. Mm-hmm. They've come from somewhere, and they've been used in different ways.
And when
kind of quite random as well, that they've ended up in that purse.
It's quite random.
Yeah.
And they all have
almost
a story.
Forgotten.
Sorry, say again?
I was just going to say, almost like forgotten things.
And is there anything else about almost forgotten?
Rejected. Not appreciated.
And when they're not appreciated, what happens to the story that they all have to tell?
They miss out bits, they lose their kind of enthusiasm for all the things that they've done and seen and picked up along the way, and they become diluted. And maybe silent, some of them. Ones right down at the bottom of the purse.
Mm.
I haven't really had a look in for a while.
And you haven't had a look in for a while.
The ones down at the bottom. I didn't hear if you said you or they.
And have you... You haven't had a look in for a while. I thought that's what you'd said. The ones at the bottom.
Yeah.
And all those things, lots of things collected in that quite stuffed vintage purse. And whereabouts is that velvety vintage purse?
Seems to be on the floor at my feet.
And whereabouts on the floor at your feet?
It's just on its side, lying down flat next to my toes.
Mm. And when that vintage purse is on the floor at your feet, then what happens?
Then I bend over and I pick it up because I'm very curious to see what's inside. And it's also just to have it because it's very pretty.
Mm.
I think I almost stepped on it and broke that pearl clasp.
You almost stepped on it.
Mm.
And then you bend over and pick it up because you're curious. And is there anything else about curious?
There's still a hope and a belief that the stuff in there is of some use and interest and can be maybe recycled in a kind of, kind of give them, rebirth, really. Give them a new lease of life.
Mm.
Maybe find a new purpose for them, a new use.
And when that stuff can be given a new lease of life and can be found a new purpose, what happens to your belief in a richness and abundance?
My belief is more something that I have inside me, and rather than it being something that I'm trying to get from external.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of belief in richness and abundance than what I kind of thought it would be. It's a richness and abundance of stuff that I already have and just needs to be re-examined and appreciated.
Mm.
Different kind of spectacles, putting different spectacles on to look at it.
Mm. So it's stuff you already have.
Yeah.
And a belief can be more something inside you.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'm realizing that the purse is mine and it's been there all the time, but I'm just seeing it in a completely different light for the first time in a long time.
And what needs to happen for you to find a new purpose for those things and give it a new lease of life?
Rummaging around in there and just almost see what happens without any kind of prefixed idea of what I want it to become. Just almost let it lead me. Just kind of look at the items individually or together and start to see what they're saying, what they're telling me.
Mm. And can you rummage around in there and see what happens?
Mm-hmm, yes. I'm doing it.
And you're doing it. And as you rummage around in there and see what happens, what happens to a belief that can be more something inside you?
It's very deeply embedded, and it's very deeply embedded. It's kind of like going way back and way down and realizing that that belief has always been there. So it's just very, very, very deep seated.
And when it's way back and down and deeply embedded and it's always been there and it's something inside you, whereabouts inside you could that belief be?
Right down low in my abdomen.
And that belief, right down there in your abdomen, does that belief have a size or a shape?
Can't see it.
And you can't see it.
No, not really.
And to find that new purpose or use for those things, you need to rummage around in there and see what happens. And is there anything else that needs to happen for you to find a new purpose or use for those things?
I think it needs to kind of come from that point of belief, rather than from my head. So it needs to come from a very deep place, kind of quite naturally.
It needs to come from that point of belief. And is that anything else about that point?
There's a lot of tension around it. It needs to relax and stretch and breathe.
And can it relax and stretch and breathe?
I think so. I think it needs a bit of help, but I think it can do it, yeah.
It needs a bit of help.
Mm.
What needs to happen to have that little bit of help?
Time, it needs to slow down and take time and to take care.
And it's time. It needs to slow down, take care. And what would you like to have happen now?
Kind of like, it's very difficult. I'd like to give over to that deep belief. I'd like give the power to it, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Put it in control. Let it move.
And take all the time you need to gain all the learnings from that, those words and that answer. And would that be an okay place to bring our short session to a close?
Yeah, could you just repeat the last bit?
Just take all the time that you need.
No, sorry, the take over and give it. Give it control.
Yeah, take over and give it control. would that be an okay place now?
Okay.
To bring that to a close.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Kathleen. Mm-hmm. I'll leave you to take a few moments to absorb all of that. And let's just go to other people on the call and check in with them first for some questions, and then we'll come back to you for your comments and thoughts in a couple of minutes. So I'll do it round the clock so everyone gets a chance to ask a question, but if you don't have a question, that's fine. But just so you've got an opportunity. So firstly, Elaine, is there anything that you'd like to ask or any comments that you'd like to make on that?
No, it's very interesting, thank you. I guess what I did notice was the pace of it. I think you'd mentioned earlier on about the language and the pace being quite slow, and I just wondered for some people how they would find that pace, that almost they would, you know, I guess I'm just sort of thinking some people might get quite, whether they'd be quite impatient with it and not understanding where you were going with it.
You might start faster and gradually mm-hmm. slow down.
Yeah.
I mean, gradually
yeah.
slow down along
that.
With me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could start more conversation. But what tends to happen is people do get totally mesmerized by these images and metaphors that occur to them, and they are more than happy to slow it right down and focus on them normally once they start to become aware of them. But you might sort of lead in gradually and talk more conversationally.
Would there ever be a case of somebody who really cannot see a metaphor or cannot come up with a metaphor?
No, they might be resistant to it, but the chances are they're giving you clues in their language. They might not see them. You know, back to NLP, some people feel them rather than see them. So they might not create an image, but they may have a sense of them, which is why you don't want to say what it looks like, because it might not look like anything. So does it have a size or a shape is neutral enough that it might just exist, they might just sense it there without necessarily
seeing. Thank you.
That's okay, thank you. Wendy, would you like to ask anything or comment? Some of you might be on mute, so I might not hear you. I'll whiz on round, but come back in case there's anyone else. So Liz, did you want to ask something? Okay, if there's silence, I'll assume not. Jonathan, what about you?
I noticed that you ask nearly every question you ask, you start with and.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether that's your particular way or if that's part of a distinct learned practice.
Yeah, very good observation. It is part of the process and an important part of the process. I suppose, again, it has the effect of holding the mirror up, because everything is joined up to everything else. Everything rolls into everything else. So that and has, and as you probably notice, it's slightly trancey. I mean, we're not talking about a deep hypnotic process here, but people are getting very absorbed in themselves and what's going on inside their own minds rather than what's happening outside. And that and just helps to keep them there rather than pay attention to what else might be going on. Kathleen, we'll come back to you in a moment. I'll give you another minute or so to absorb. Lindsay, any questions or comments from you?
First of all, thank you, Kathleen, for your honesty and your openness. It's quite a process.
Yeah.
I was wondering, Angela, what was guiding your choice of questions at any point? You asked, at one point you asked a series of questions that were all the same. Is there anything else about? Is there anything else about? And I just wondered, was there anything which guided your choice of question at any particular moment? Or what, are there any patterns or principles that one can could follow? Or is it more organic than that?
A bit of both, really. Is there anything else about is the cleanest of all questions, and it's really the process I'm giving you all to take away is just try asking, is there anything else about, and do that five times in a row and see where you get to. Because it's the simplest clean language question, and it works every time. So I would say it's you know, one of the basic bread and butter questions. And at the start, all you really want to do is get as much information about all the components of that metaphor. And we had a wonderful metaphor immediately of the velvet vintage purse. So I just wanted to have Kathleen explore it for no reason other than to know more about it. And she just got more insights. And at one stage, you may have all been wondering, well, what on earth has that got to do with a belief in the richness and abundance? But I hope you also could hear it had everything to do with a belief in richness and abundance. Then towards the end, the last few minutes, I was probably focused on trying to bring it to some kind of conclusion as it was a demonstration. So what had happened organically is Kathleen had given me a metaphoric outcome. Now she was saying, I need to find a new purpose for these things. And this stuff can be given a new lease of life. So I thought, well, this is a metaphoric solution now. So I tested that. Is there a relationship between finding a new purpose and having a belief in richness and abundance? And there was. So I thought, okay, we're on track. So I went into as near as you get to an action plan with clean language, and I asked what needs to happen for there to be a new purpose or to find a new purpose. And that's when we got into the rummaging around, and that was, you know, a little bit probably of change going on or exploring possible changes. Now, I felt, and I'm sure you all felt, we could have gone on longer. We left it at a point that I think Kathleen's got some new thoughts to think about. And with clean language, the other thing is once you've started to explore metaphors, they don't disappear when you stop asking clean language questions. They stay with that person. And sometimes they can evolve and change all by themselves after the session. So if ever you do work with someone with metaphors, it's always worth checking in with them next time, because nothing might happen during that session with them, but a lot may happen over the next couple of days. So our time is nearly up, but I want to check back with Kathleen and just see if she wants to say anything. And I would also like to thank you so much, Kathleen. You really were very open, and I very much appreciate that you were willing to share that with us all.
Thank you. It was lovely. It's a lovely little kind of journey to go on. It's very skillful questioning. And it brought me to kind of a very quick... I mean, in a very quick space of time, whatever it was, 15 minutes or so, to kind of profound realization of probably not what to do, but at least open up my mind to thinking, to really seeing it in a different light. And I think that was, for me, that was the most beneficial thing, was to that realization that, you know, it's all there already. It's not something external. It is very much part of me, and it's very deep-seated. It's really going way, way back, in kind of fundamental beliefs. And just to perhaps kind of reevaluate the situation in a different light, really. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And a lot of people find it quite an enjoyable experience, depending what they're exploring, but it can be quite a very relaxing experience as well. If we're all happy to stay on the line for a couple more minutes, I'll just give everyone else on the line an opportunity to ask a question if they have one. So, Jill, did you want to ask anything or make any comment?
Yeah, just thank you both for that. And I think there's something about I've experienced it on the sort of client side just once. And I think what I needed afterwards was just to take care of myself and give myself a bit more space and time for reflection rather than hurtling off and carrying on my normal day. So just that point, really, something about valuing the impact and just giving yourself time to allow it to settle and to come into its own, really, rather than carrying on in a rushabout way.
Okay, thank you, Jill. And Shola, is there anything that you would like to add or comment or question on?
Yeah, I do have a couple of questions, actually. It's interesting. It was interesting. What's interesting for me is, as a psychotherapist, then what you've been doing, you kind of mentioned Jung. Anyway, it's not particularly unusual in psychotherapy and counselling. Mm-hmm. And what's kind of what I'm curious about is how you might use that in coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Or kind of when would you want to use it?
You could use it in almost any situation with coaching. You might not necessarily, I mean, what I do as somebody who's quite comfortable with this process, I might start with a normal coaching question. Okay, what outcome do you want to work towards? And if somebody is starting to give me metaphors to describe what their outcome is, then I might start exploring their outcome using those metaphors, looking to see whether, you know, they can have more understanding of that outcome through the metaphors. So within the structure of a coaching session, it can work very well. You might also use it as at some point during a normal coaching session if it appears as though somebody has some kind of limiting belief or a conflicting value. You may decide to stop and say, okay, you know, what you're describing now, that's like what for you? And then just sort of have a little side piece where you have them gain some kind of insight into how they're structuring their thoughts before sort of going back to your coaching process and looking at where they might need to go next. So you could do it as a sort of little 10-minute extra somewhere in a session, structured the way you normally do, or, and with further training than what you've experienced this evening, you can structure a whole session just through using clean language questions. In fact, with or without metaphor, you can do
sense.
A whole session with someone with no metaphor.
That's useful. I have another question as well, just quickly, is I attended something recently on integral coaching, and what they were talking about having a session using a lot of metaphor, but it was interesting because they spoke about the exact opposite, creating a metaphor for the client. And actually, they had a process, they went into it, created a metaphor and gave it to the client. And I'm wondering what you think of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something I learned in my NLP days. And I guess it's like being given a gift. Sometimes the gift will be lovely and you'll really like it, and other times you might not. I think what would be important is that it was presented in a way, you know, maybe this is of use to you. I fear that if somebody was very directive in, you know, this is the metaphor for you to use, then I wonder what effect it would have. But I haven't been on that course, so I don't know. But as I say, I do know I covered a similar exercise in my NLP training, and the way it was delivered was in a very gentle, you know, presenting a gift fashion. So it's up to the person whether they want to take it or chuck it away.
Self-generated.
But you didn't have to take it. You didn't have to accept it.
But am I right in thinking that in clean language you'd never do anything like that?
No. You'd never do that. It's totally non-directive. And, you know, that's again, it isn't psychotherapy. It can be used for psychotherapy, but in coaching what sort of keeps it safe is that you're only working with what the client says. You're not trying to influence or change in any fashion at all. So the client stays safe. They work with whatever they want to work with, and you're not forcing them down one path or another or trying to have them take on a different metaphor, which might sort of, you know, feel uncomfortable to their system.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Lisa, was there anything that you wanted to say before we close?
I especially wanted to thank you both, especially Catherine, for the your openness. It's very strong. One main question that I'd like to ask is that I noticed towards the end you were kind of winding to close down. And I found that very important because, as you said before, you know, you can get like in a light trance-like kind of state. So an abrupt closure would just, you know, as someone else said, you know, value the impact and allow it all to settle down. I find the closures very, very important. And I just wondered if you could, you know, explain a bit more about closing the question.
It very much depends on where you've reached. If you had a full session with a client, you may have followed it in a more structured fashion and you would be concluding with, you know, and is there anything else that needs to happen for, and is there anything else? And until the person says no, that's everything that needs to happen, and then tick them off one by one. And can that one happen? And can the next one happen? So more like the close of a coaching session, in that you literally go through the shopping list of things that need to happen and work out what needs to happen with each of them. And we didn't have time to go through that whole finishing off process. You don't always have time to do that in a real life situation, and it just depends where the client's got to. So I ended with a typical starter question, which was, and what would you like to have happen now? And a bit like we were saying earlier, that even when something has just finished, there's always the next thing. So it was a sort of way of drawing a line across everything that we'd covered and just clarifying, well, what actually does Kathleen want to happen next? So if we were working together, what she said next might be then what we pick up with at the start of the next session. I also said, and take all the time you need to absorb the learning, and that kind of thing is important, and inviting her, it's an okay place to end the session. And if you were working with a client face-to-face, you would certainly want to give them a few minutes and then start talking in a more conversational fashion. What did you gain from that? And what are you taking away from that? Just to sort of reorient them back to the real world.
Right. Wonderful, thank you.
That's okay. I mean, there is an awful lot to this. If you know much about clean language, it is quite an art and a science. You can do sort of like, I've done something like 30 days of training in it, and there is always something new to learn. So we have just touched the tip of the iceberg, to give you yet one more metaphor. This particular session, I wanted to encourage you to feel that this is something that you can use within organisations. It's not just for dealing with personal matters. And I've seen this kind of work done very, very effectively for people within organisations, managers, leaders, who have these kinds of conceptual thoughts that will influence how well they lead, how well they get on in their career. All these metaphors exist in the workplace as well as everywhere else. And it could be a very refreshing way to work with leaders and managers. Okay, so the simple process I'm giving you to take away, and I will send you all some notes after this that you can refer back to, is simply that one clean language question of, and is there anything else about that? And give them back the word that they've given you. And if you can do that to any metaphor they've given you, and then any more words that they give back to you, then explore one or other of the words they give back. And again, say, and is there anything else about that?
Yeah.
And do that 5 times. And then what you could do is end with either, and what would you like to have happen now? And see what's come out of it. Or to nick from another part of David Grove's work, another useful, clean way to end would be simply, and what do you know now?
Mm-hmm.
What do you know now is from David's emergence work rather than clean language, but it would fit nicely as just part of a very short, simple exercise you could do with someone for simply to help them to understand a little part of their thinking.
Very interesting.
Okay, let me check that there wasn't anyone else on the line that never got to speak, because I'll be sending out notes and further information to those that I know have attended the call.
Okay.
Angela, I joined late. I'm sorry. It's Julia. Julia Bicknell.
Hello, Julia.
Here. Hi.
Okay. I'll make sure we send you the notes and stuff too.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'll wrap it up because we've overrun.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your participation.
Brilliant.
I hope
really
you enjoyed
enjoyable.
It.
Formative,
and
yeah.
I'll keep in touch with you about further clean language resources as and when they become available.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.